Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We don't got to spend a whole lot of time talking about the Washington football team, but it's fairly obvious to me that the Dwayne Haskins and Washington experience has come to an end, and they should probably get rid of him sooner rather than later. I know you don't want to give up on your first-round draft pick, but you've already replaced him. He has been a healthy scratch now for three consecutive weeks. You were fining him for breaking COVID protocols. It's just best you go your separate ways. You did what you're supposed to do. You evaluated a quarterback in the first round. You drafted him. It is not working. Try again this year in the draft.
It is weird how little of a chance a draft pick that high got. Most of the time when you're drafted that high, we were talking about this earlier in the case of Drew Locke being a second round pick, like you got to go out there and actually show out. If you're Baker Mayfield, you're just average, but you were the top pick, you're going to get chances. For Dwayne Haskins, who was what, like a top 10 pick in the draft, to cut cord so quick is crazy.
Coming up in just a little bit, there is a game being played within the game. I'll explain what I mean. But speaking of young quarterbacks, here's what Drew Locke had to say about going up against the Kansas City Chiefs and turning into a villain.
I mean, it's cool to be able to, you know, kind of put the Darth Vader mask on and, you know, steer away from the Jedi and come to the dark side, so to say, over here in Denver. It's kind of like playing that guy. Hopefully I can be that guy and get a win this Sunday and start the rivalry.
Our football lives will be better if Drew Locke is a good player and ends up being a worthy adversary in the AFC West. Let me ask you this question as a diehard Chiefs fan.
Did he say the dark side? Did he say Jedi? Is he talking Star Wars?
Star Trek, different things. Trek. You know, he wasn't doing wars. Nope.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
Never mind.
Nope.
Okay. I didn't know there were different
Star
things.
Trek. Yeah,
okay.
Totally.
All right.
Right now, who's the player that you dislike most in the AFC West?
Because
for 15 years, it was Von Miller or Peyton Manning or Phillip Rivers. I mean, guys who were Hall of Fame caliber players.
Yeah, it was really
easy
for a long time.
It used to be John Elway or LT or Antonio Gates. Like, for a long time, if I ask you that question, who's the player that you dislike the most in the AFC West? Like, right now, if we do the text line, I don't really think the text line gives us a clear answer on who's the player right now in the division. On the Raiders, on the Broncos, on the Chargers, you would say, I do not like that individual.
I guess I would say Derek Carr, but you're proving your point because it's a stretch for me because I don't really have anything against Derek Carr.
What about right now in the AFC? Like, out of all the teams in the AFC, who's the player you say, I don't like that individual? I get a certain level of excitement when my team beats that team. I think it's turned into Lamar Jackson. You want to know why? Because Lamar Jackson is a worthy adversary, and you know that going up. The Broncos, when they were good, always provided a worthy adversary, whether it was head coach with Mike Shanahan, whether it was with the skill position players. Terrell Davis is in the Hall of Fame. Shannon Sharp is in the Hall
of
Fame.
I hate those guys.
Rod Smith was a good player. Ed McCaffrey. We can go up and down the list.
Ed McCaffrey.
And they also did it at quarterback with Elway and Peyton Manning. I want Drew Locke to be good because it makes our jobs more interesting. It's not interesting whenever Brock Osweiler is the quarterback of the Broncos and the Chiefs are a 12.5-point favorite. I want Drew Locke to be good. I want the Broncos to be good because it will make the NFL regular season more interesting and more compelling for us all.
I will say Drew Locke, personally, he keeps drifting farther and farther away from likability. So you grew up in the backyard, grew up like 15 minutes away from where I did. How can I not like you? I root for everybody that comes from the same place that I do. Unless you go to MU. And then I got to kind of reconsider. And there have been guys that grew up in Overland Park or Kansas City or whatever that go to MU that I still root for. And then you go to the Broncos. And now it's like, all right, bro, you're testing my last nerve, so I agree with you. I wish no ill will toward him. I hope that he's a good quarterback. I think that he's in a pretty good situation, and he's going to be a good quarterback. But also, I think the guy that you're talking about, frankly, is Justin Herbert. I don't think it's Drew Lock. I think it's Justin Herbert. I think that he's going to be that guy that's really unlikable, that's going to kind of carry the torch as the second best quarterback in the division. And I think that Drew Lock's good, but what you're describing to me is actually Justin Herbert.
Text line 913-576-7610. A lot of people are saying Keenan Allen is the player that they dislike most in the division, which actually makes a lot of sense. He certainly had a war of words with the Kansas City Chiefs over the last couple of years. Speaking of war of words, you certainly have had your fair share when it comes to the Broncos' former quarterback and now general manager John Elway. Here's what he had to say about losing 9 consecutive times to the Chiefs.
That's a depressing number, what you just told me right there. I knew it wasn't very good, but that's very depressing. So, I mean, I think, you know, it'd be good for us to realize that we can still compete with these guys. We have to play our best, but we can still compete with these guys. We have to be able to make plays. And so that's the mentality we have to go in with, and hopefully we can get it done.
You know that it has to absolutely burn the soul of John Elway to now turn around and see the team that you're chasing and the team that you are a long way away from is the Kansas City Chiefs, when that is a team that you absolutely dominated while you were in the NFL. Most fourth quarter comebacks, you won playoff games at Arrowhead. You know that it has to absolutely burn the soul of John Elway that the moment that Peyton Manning left, the moment that he turned into a pumpkin, the team that immediately took over. And it wasn't even like Mahomes instantly took over. They were beating you with Alex Smith, and then they got this other guy that's going to do the same thing that you did to the AFC for the next 12 years. I mean, John Elway went to 5 Super Bowls. We think Mahomes can go to 4 or 5 or more of these things. Like, the Chiefs have the better version of John Elway. You know that has to keep him up at night.
Think about C-Dot. If you're considered an offensive-minded head coach, you always want your, at least your offense to be good. Like for Andy Reid in the past in Philly a couple of years, he had bad defenses, but at least his offense was still putting up, you know, 30 points a game because that was his thing. Think about Bill Belichick. You know, last year the offense wasn't great, but he's a defensive guy. So sometimes he's not going to have the best offense, but the defense is pretty much consistently going to be there. If you're John Elway and you're on the short list of the best quarterbacks of all time to ever play the game, in theory, you should at least know what a good quarterback looks like, right? It's not always going to work out, but you should know what the skill set that it takes to be a good quarterback. Well, here's the quarterbacks that he thought would be good. Kyle Orton, Tim Tebow, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler, Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, Brandon Allen, Jeff Driscoll, Brett Rippon, and now Drew Lock. Because I don't give him any credit for Peyton Manning. Manning essentially looked around. He said, that's the best situation. Oh, cool. John Elway's there. And he ended up in Denver. And he was right. He played for the defense was so good that that Manning could be so bad that he got another Super Bowl ring out of it. So obviously it was the right decision. But at some point, the Broncos brass, whoever Elway's boss is going to have to go to John Elway and say, dude, you're not the guy for the job, because the most important thing in the NFL for a general manager is to find the quarterback. And it's one thing to say, well, he couldn't find the quarterback once or twice or 3 times. Man, I just listed 11 quarterbacks that he's tried since he's been in Denver. How many shots do you get?
The weird thing, though, about Locke is I don't know if he has or hasn't found the quarterback. Like, at the end of the season, are we going to be at a place where we definitively know whether Locke is the answer or he's not?
Probably
he's gotten
not.
Off to such a slow start so far this year with all the injuries, his injury, and all of that, where I'm with you. Nobody can defend what he's done at the quarterback position since Peyton Manning has left. But I would say that Drew Locke was promising enough as a rookie. And then this year, he's almost been hurt since the word go. They lost their number one pass-catching option in Cortland Sutton. The Jerry Jeudy, he's had to come around slowly because of the injury. Like, I think the Broncos are going to continue to be in that gray area at the end of the season of not knowing what to do at the quarterback position. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they draft a quarterback early on and just say, hey, this Drew Lock experience isn't working. I also wouldn't be surprised if Drew Lock is the starting quarterback next year. They're just in such a very weird spot with where he is right now in his development.
You think they could draft a quarterback next year?
Absolutely.
Oh, I think they're good on Drew Lock. I think that Drew Lock is their guy. He's going to get an opportunity. He hasn't gotten a shot yet. I mean, this year he's played in 2 games. Last year he played in 5 games. It was the end of the year because Joe Flacco didn't work out. So I'd be very surprised. He's going to get a chance next year. I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean,
but that would really surprise, because that'll stunt the growth of Drew Lock. Over his shoulder.
I don't think you do that. I think you just, if you draft a quarterback in the top 10, it ain't stunt nobody's growth. Drew Lock ain't the quarterback of the team anymore, and Justin Fields is the quarterback. I think a lot of it is where they end up selecting, but you're telling me this Broncos team gets the 8th overall pick We think there's no chance they take a quarterback at there. Who knows how it falls out. Like, I think there could be five quarterbacks that go in the first round of the draft. I'm with you. I think Locke will be back. I don't think it's outside the realm of the possibility they draft over. I mean, you spent the second round draft pick, and now with the way the rookie quarterback scale is, man, if you think the next guy is the guy, who cares if you drafted Josh Rosen? If you got a chance to get Kyler Murray, you draft Kyler Murray, you tell Josh Rosen to see you later. I think the same thing could happen to the Broncos. And that's why I'm saying with Locke this year, the offensive weapons you would think you like. Like, next year, everybody's coming back if you're the Broncos. Everybody is under contract from a skill position standpoint. So if you think the quarterback is the weak link, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at all go draft a quarterback high.
Yeah, I don't think that they think that, though. I think that John Elway, at least by his words and his actions, they think that Drew Lock is a good quarterback. They think that Drew Lock is the future. They think that Drew Lock, even though he's only played eight games, should have been a first-round pick, maybe a top-10 pick. So, I mean, maybe they're wrong, but they're sticking with him. I can't see any situation, unless they don't win another game and they end up 2-14 and they got one of the top five picks and they got their pick at quarterback, not named Trevor Lawrence. Well, at that point, then maybe they'll have an option. But, I mean, why would you talk so much about Drew Lock? Why would you not go up to somebody else this offseason? Like, I'm pretty sure that at least for the short term, it might not be a long-term marriage, but Drew Lock's the guy in Denver.
Coming up next, we'll talk about the game within the game, Sunday against the Broncos. I'll explain. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2-6.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to be registered to win Alex Gordon autographed bat, also $250 from the Royals team store. We'll also answer the question on which team should you be cheering for this weekend between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Tennessee Titans. But I wrote down five questions that I think the Chiefs need to answer in this game, because I'm not going to lie to you, I'm not really as concerned with who wins or loses this game, because I think we all know who is going to win this game. And if we are not talking about a Chiefs win on Monday, a lot of things went terribly wrong in this game, and we got to start to reevaluate how we feel about this team in the division, because they will have played subpar in three of their division games so far this season. So I'm going into this with the expectation, I assume, that all three of us are at, and I imagine a majority of the listeners have. The Chiefs are going to win this game. These are the five things that I'm going to be looking for in this. Number one is, and we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about it, please don't tell me that Harrison Butker is going to miss another extra point in this. He's supposed to be automatic in this. Now, I understand they have made the extra points more difficult than they did back in 2010, but there is no reason, if he misses an extra point in this, he will have missed one in five out of their seven games so far. At that point, I do think it's fair to come to the conclusion that he is going to miss one in the postseason, and that could be potentially why you advance or don't advance in the playoffs. One of the things I'm going to be looking forward to in this game is, what's going on with Harrison Butker? After the Ravens game, it was like, oh, okay, all right, you were going up against Justin Tucker, you were thinking a little bit too much here. I don't want to see them miss another extra point this week.
Yeah, it's somewhat troublesome, although it hasn't really cost them so far. It's weird only because, like, we saw him line up for the 52-yard kick and then get iced and then made it again and then get iced and made it again. And then we all said, well, at least I came on the radio and said, yeah, maybe he's the new Justin Tucker. And he's looked like anything but, and it's one of those things we can pretend like it doesn't matter because it hasn't mattered. But at some point, we can tell what's going on here. He's got a little bit of Chuck Knoblauch situation going on. So let's get it out of your head before it does become something that matters.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with Harrison Butker. I'm not going to try to be a sports shrink in this.
How many has he missed?
He's missed four so far.
That's a problem. I'm saying,
he has missed one in four of their six games so far this season. At some point, that's a problem you would like to be corrected, because it almost became a problem. If the Chiefs don't get points at the very end of the drive when they were up six and then they kick the field goal to make it nine, if you then punt the ball back to Buffalo, they have the ball down six with a chance to take the lead. It's a very different scenario. They got to start making extra points. That's got to be something that's automatic. I don't need him to make every kick from over 50 yards. That's not really realistic. There's not too many people in the NFL that do that consistently. I don't think I'm asking a whole lot for you to not be dead last in the NFL when it comes to extra point conversion, which is 77 points. He's the worst kicker in the NFL when it comes to extra point. He's way too good of a kicker to be dead last in extra points.
If that continues too much longer, and we keep asking how you're going to use Le'Veon Bell, just line up for two. The Chiefs are 50% when it comes to that over the last couple of years. Now they've got the perfect weapons to do it. So if you're going to keep missing extra points, do something else.
Two other things I'm going to be looking for in the game that you mentioned, Le'Veon Bell. What's the role for Bell going to look like? Is he going to be a member of this game? Is he going to be active in this game? Is he going to be a big participant in this? Are they going to use him a lot in the game? The usage for Le'Veon Bell. Also for Mecole Hardman. The last game, he didn't start. He only had one target, and he only played two more snaps than Byron Pringle. Like, right now, if I put up a toss-up question, what do we think the higher number is? Do we think it's Patrick Mahomes' touchdown passes or Mecole Hardman catches in this? What would you take, the touchdown passes or the catches from Mecole Hardman?
I mean, I'm going to take the catches of Mecole Hardman. I think that at some point.
I mean, he had zero in the last game.
No, I get you. At some point, though, I think over the next couple of weeks, he's going to fall into his role, and he's going to have that game where he either has an 80-yard touchdown catch or he has maybe four catches for 80 yards. So I'll say this is that game. I think that Pat has a good game. I think that Hardman has a good game. Give me four passing touchdowns for Pat, and give me five catches for Hardman.
Yeah, we'll certainly see what happens.
Which would double what he's had all season?
Yeah, so I'm looking at it right now. Things I'm looking forward to in the game, because I think the Chiefs are going to win this game pretty comfortably. It comes through extra points from Harrison Bucker. He has missed four so far this season. What's the role for Bell? What's the role for Hardman? Another thing is, can they cut down on the penalties? This team is far too good, far too talented to be top six in the NFL with penalties. They're, especially with the kind of penalties that they have, one way that you can keep a bad team in the game, a team that you're more talented than, is committing penalties on third down, especially ones that are automatic first downs, defensive holding, pass interference, things like that that we saw against the Buffalo Bills. Those are things that they got to clean up here. This team just has to play more disciplined football, can't continue to commit penalties to create third and long, also can't create penalties to continue drives for their opposition. Can they cut down on penalties? This shouldn't be a game in which you got eight penalties for 90 yards. This should be one of those games that I want to see three penalties for 20 yards.
Since our boy got put back on the team after getting caught with the gas after being put on suspension, he's been super grabby. The entire secondary has. That's where they need to clean it up the most. Those pass interference penalties, those illegal hand-checking penalties for after 5 yards off the line. To me, that's been the biggest concern. Like, and again, that's what happens when you've got so many young guys, so many first and second year players, but it definitely needs to be cleaned up.
And the last thing is just offensive line consistency. They deserve the game ball in the game against the Buffalo Bills. They were fantastic against Buffalo. That was one good game. Can you continue that momentum, and can you carry it on in this game against the Denver Broncos? We'll see. Those are the five things I'm looking for in this game. I think they're going to win the game. I don't think on Monday we're going to be really breaking down a whole lot of situations. I'm looking at what's the role for Le'Veon Bell. How many touches does he get? I think he's going to be in that 6 to 8 range. What's the role for Mecole Hardman? You think he's going to have a 5-catch, 80-yard day? How does the offensive line look? Can they continue what they did last season? Can this team cut down on penalties? And can Harrison Bucker make all his extra points? Those are the five things I'm looking forward to in this game.
I doubt the offensive line looks as dominant. In fact, I know the offensive line is not going to look as dominant as they did against Buffalo. And the only time that you even recognize the offensive line is they're awful like they were against the Raiders, or great like they were against Buffalo. They're probably going to be somewhere in the middle. What I like about the line now is we thought that maybe before the trade deadline, you'd go out there and try to find a Cam Irving, try to find a veteran that's played for a couple of years that can play a couple of different positions on that line. Now, just based on 1 week, I saw enough that I don't really think you need to go out there and add another piece to that line.
I know you're big on you don't really care how they look as long as they win or lose, or you may be changing that for these three opponents. I mean, you're playing three teams that have a 0% chance of making the playoffs in my mind. Carolina's probably the best out of these three teams, but I don't think Carolina wins 9 games this year. I think they're a 7, maybe 8 win football team. I think Denver's way too banged up. They win 6 games. I then look at the Jets. I think the most they win is 3 games. And Carolina is going to win 8 games. Are you maybe worried about how they play in these games and not just the win-loss record?
A little bit. I mean, it's a time to start looking pretty. The next two games against Denver and the Jets, the Chiefs are 31.5-point favorites combined, which is just crazy. So Vegas thinks that the Chiefs should roll up both the Broncos and the Jets, and I agree with them. The Broncos are a little bit of a tricky team because you just look at what they did last week and say, okay, we know they're capable of beating good teams. The Jets, that hasn't been the case for a long, long time. So if you beat Denver by a touchdown, 8 points, 10 points, don't cover, I'm not going to trip. If you do that the next week versus the New York Jets, who are a terrible football team, and the final score is 31-28, yeah, then maybe you got issues even with a win.
I do want to see this team sort of be dominant in the division. Like, I know this team has that dominant stretch. We just haven't seen them be dominant in the division. Like, they didn't play a really clean game against the Chargers. They had to battle in the fourth quarter and overtime. They didn't play very well against the Raiders, and they ended up losing that. Like, we talk a lot about the division that exists in this division between the Chiefs and the other teams. We haven't really seen that so far. Is this the first time we see it? As you alluded to, they're 13.5-point favorites over the Broncos.
Probably. I mean, I think that so far the team that we've seen this year hasn't looked like the Chiefs that we expected. That being said, they're 5-1 and haven't got blown out yet. It does feel like we're going to revisit this conversation a month from now after they've played Carolina and the Broncos and the Jets, and they're going to get fat off of bad teams, and the offense is going to be averaging 33 points a game, and the defense is going to be top five, and the team's going to be 8-1. Because the truth is, the Chiefs have already gotten through their most difficult part of the schedule. Like, you want to talk about a tough six games out the gates. The Chiefs had a hell of a difficult schedule.
Coming up next, we'll give you a chance to be registered to win an Alex Gordon autographed bat. Also, $250 to the Royals team store. All you need to do is stick around through the break. Whenever you hear Denny Matthews, be calling number four to 913-576-7610. That's next. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we will get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. So this Sunday, you called it, what'd you call it? It was opinion-changing Sunday. I don't think there is any opinion that could potentially change more than right now. The only two undefeated teams in the AFC between Pittsburgh and Tennessee. What team do you think Chiefs fans should be cheering for this weekend?
It's a good question. Probably Tennessee. I mean, you faced Tennessee a few times over the last few years. Now, they beat you in that playoff game with the Marcus Mariota pass to himself. I don't know what the hell happened there. They beat you in the MV Pinnell didn't play for whatever reason. I don't really know what the hell happened in that game. And then, of course, you beat him in the playoffs last year when we were all scared of Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry didn't really do much of anything. What do you have, like 7 yards in the second half of that game? So you know what you've got. You've faced Tennessee a couple of times the last few years, and I feel like matchup-wise, both these teams are dangerous because Derrick Henry, I mean, the guy averaged 7.8 yards per carry the second half of the season last year. Yeah, the Chiefs slowed him down, but he might be the premier running back in football. And I've been saying it about Pittsburgh the entire time. Those type of teams are scary because they got a quarterback that's been there, done that, a coach that's been there, done that, and defensively, a bunch of players that are going to be Pro Bowlers, all-pro type players. So they're a very complete football team. I think as a Chiefs fan, though, I'm a little bit more scared of Pittsburgh because they're more of the unknown. You haven't had to play them in a couple of years. We know that when playoff games happen between these two teams, bad things can result. So if you ask me, on a neutral field, the playoffs roll around, who would you rather play? I think barely I'd still rather play Tennessee over Pittsburgh.
I actually think if you're a Chiefs fan, you probably want Pittsburgh to win this game for this reason. I think Pittsburgh certainly has losses coming up in the division because their division is a lot tougher than the one that Tennessee plays in. Like, Tennessee, if they get this win and then you look at the division that they play and they can just run through division, like, it's possible that Tennessee could go 13-3, 14-2 if this is a game that they can go out there and win. You got to think, you play in the division with Jacksonville, Indianapolis, and Houston. Like, three subpar teams. Now, I know Indianapolis, the record is there, but I don't really think that Colts team is very good, and I certainly trust the Titans team more than I trust them. I just think there's more of a chance that Tennessee sort of breaks away from the pack if they can get this win. They already got the win against Buffalo. They would then get this win against Pittsburgh outside of their division. I don't really know if Pittsburgh is going to be able to do the same thing given the division that they have. You play Baltimore twice. You play Cleveland on the road this year. Cincinnati's kind of one of those weird teams. They could potentially get you one time, and Pittsburgh still plays at Buffalo later in the season on Sunday Night Football. I don't really think Pittsburgh can sort of run away this year from everybody else in the AFC, where I think Tennessee could because of their division. So if we're just talking just purely from a standings tiebreaker standpoint, I actually think the answer is Pittsburgh.
I think if Pittsburgh wins this game, C-Dot, there's going to be some people out there that are calling Pittsburgh the best team in the AFC. Some people call them the best team maybe in the NFL. Of course, they'll be the last undefeated team in the AFC. And I think a lot of people are going to jump on the bandwagon that I've been talking about all year, which is this division is not a foregone conclusion that it's Baltimore's. Like, if you look at the Chiefs and you say the Chiefs are definitely going to win their division, I'm not going to argue that. They've done it, what, 4 or 5 years in a row, and it's a bunch of teams that are kind of on the come up. But if you look at Baltimore versus Pittsburgh, you always say it, 6 in one hand, half dozen in the other. I think that's 50-50 right now. If at the end of the year you tell me that the Baltimore Ravens end up a wild card team after being 14-2 in the one seed, I'm not going to be surprised at all.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at that either. Like, I look at Pittsburgh and Baltimore, those two teams in the division. I think Baltimore is better than them. I think they're more talented. I think they're just a more complete football team. But you're right, in that division with how tough it is, wouldn't be surprised to see Pittsburgh go 13-3, Baltimore go 12-4. And just based on the luck of the draw and them being in your division, Baltimore is then a wild card team. I think that's the most important race in the NFL. I don't think you can win a Super Bowl if you're either team if you don't win your division. I don't think you're going on the road, whether you're Pittsburgh or Baltimore, even if you're what we deem to be the third best team in the AFC, you ain't going on the road and beating Tennessee, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh or at Baltimore if those are the games that you're going to potentially have to go up and play. I think it is nearly impossible to do it this year with how strong and top-heavy the AFC is if you don't at least host your first game. I don't think it's realistic to ask any team to go on the road and beat those three teams. So I think winning that division is important.
If you're Baltimore and you lose this game, if you're Pittsburgh and you lose this game, then I think at that point you look at Baltimore, and then I think a lot of people are going to say, yeah, Baltimore's the same team that they were a year ago, and they're going to rack up 13 or 14 wins. That's why I said I think it's a real opinion changer Sunday or Monday, depending on which games you're looking at. There's a bunch of these types of games, like Tampa Bay versus Las Vegas. Now, I don't know if they're actually going to play that football game. We'll see what ends up happening, because right now the Raiders don't have an offensive line. But let's say Tampa wins. I think if Tampa wins, everybody's going to look at them and look at their record and go, okay, maybe Tom Brady's got a little bit of gas left in the tank. Maybe we need to start talking about them. If the Raiders win and back-to-back wins against Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, people are going to be talking about them. I think there's a lot of games. I mean, San Francisco versus New England, that's more of an eliminator type game than an opinion. I would say whoever loses that game is really climbing uphill just to make the postseason. Bears versus the Rams. Like, if the Rams win, then they're a 6-2 football team. If the Bears win, then they're a 6-1 football team. This is a really fun weekend with a lot of really close lines. It's going to sway our opinion how we feel about these teams.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we talk so much about the one seed in week three against Baltimore that once the Chiefs won that game, I feel like we just haven't revisited the conversation anymore. Like, if Tennessee gets this win, it gives them a significant leg up in winning the one seed. Again, they beat Buffalo, you beat Pittsburgh, so you've got two all-important tiebreakers that you can have. You also have that division that you can just sort of gobble up. Like, Tennessee becomes a pretty clear favorite to be a one seed if that's the case, where we can debate and go back and forth on how much you believe Tennessee, but if they're the team that gets the bye week, you get a chance to rest Derrick Henry and then have him fully rested for down the stretch of the postseason, that gives them a significant advantage. Like, we got to start talking about Tennessee if they win this game as a team that can sort of steal that bye. And I keep hearing from everybody how important that bye is. If you're telling me Derrick Henry gets a chance to rest at the end of the season, especially when they move their bye week up to the beginning, so their bye was in week four, and you give Henry a chance to get fully rested and he can have then three straight weekends of 30 carries, I don't know if that's a scenario you want to put yourself in if you're any other team in the AFC.
Do you believe in him like that, though? Like, do you think there's actually a chance that they go 13-3 or 14-2?
Absolutely.
The Tennessee Titans?
Absolutely.
What about the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I don't think so because of the division, but I mean, winning a game like that certainly changes your opinion. I just look at it. I think they're going to lose to Cleveland once because Cleveland's just that kind of team. You probably lose to Baltimore once. Maybe you lose a couple other games. Like, Pittsburgh's ceiling to me is probably 12-4, but if you think they can go 12-4, they obviously can go 13-3.
And I'd assume that you've eliminated Buffalo from that top
seed. I don't think they have a chance of being a one seed.
And Cleveland, even though they're 4-2, no chance. And Indy, they're 4-2, they have no chance. Correct. So we're down to three teams right now who have a chance of being in the top seed. The Chiefs, Baltimore, and Tennessee. And the Chiefs have game in hand versus Baltimore, which is why even when they played that game, I think everybody had to recognize that's going to go a long way in determining who the number one seed is. So I don't want to take Baltimore out of the conversation. But at this point, and I actually tend to agree with you, which I generally don't like to do, the one seed's likely to come down to the Chiefs and the Tennessee Titans, which, to a man, C-Dot, not me, not you, not any of our guests, we kept talking about this entire offseason. It was the Chiefs and Baltimore. It was Baltimore and the Chiefs. Who's the third best team? Rob threw out Buffalo. I don't even remember who I said. I know that it wasn't Tennessee. I don't remember anybody saying that. And now we're talking about them going 14-2 and possibly being the number one seed. Like, I think we got to face it. Tennessee is a real threat.
Yeah, Tennessee is a real threat. But I do think that Sean Barber made a good point yesterday when he asked this question, where if I made a list of quarterbacks that I would trust to be down two possessions in the fourth quarter of a game and feel like you're still in it, where you can't lean on the running game and it's solely based on
Don't tell me Tannehill's not on that list, because he is.
I don't think I'm putting him on the list
right
now.
You got to. You have to. You have to right now. I mean, look at the numbers. Like, I know that Ryan.
I saw him last year in the playoffs in that same scenario, and I had 0% confidence he could do it against the Chiefs. Once Patrick Mahomes scored that run, nobody thought that Ryan Tannehill was going to be able to overcome it. I'm talking middle of the second quarter. Mahomes scores that. Kansas City takes the lead for the first time in the game. We all knew at that moment that it was over. Derrick Henry wasn't going to have a good day, and it was based on Ryan Tannehill to go out there and beat that defense. So we can act like we got all this confidence in Ryan Tannehill. I would say if you take Henry out away from it, who might be the best offensive player in the NFL that doesn't play quarterback in the league, where he can't have those superhuman kind of days, and it's based on Tannehill throwing it 40, 45 times or not. I don't know if he's that kind of guy. Like, I know the Chiefs are a team where if they're down 10, let's say, Mahomes takes them down the field, all you got to get is one stop in that scenario because you are terrified to give the ball back to that individual. I don't know if I'm terrified to give the ball back to Ryan Tannehill just yet.
Not against the Chiefs, and that's not what I was saying. But
I would say against Pittsburgh, I wouldn't be scared to do that if I'm them. I wouldn't be scared to do it against Baltimore if I'm them. I'm just not at that place with Tannehill yet.
I wouldn't pick any team to come back from double digits against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, we saw it earlier this year against the Raiders. That sure as hell wouldn't have been the team that I picked. But if you want to say against Team X, is Ryan Tannehill good enough that the team gets down to not count on just the running game? You're right. Versus the Chiefs last year, he wasn't. But I thought we chose the bigger sample size over the smaller one. And if you look at the numbers over the last 14 games, the last season, the numbers are almost identical. I know it doesn't sound right, but they are almost identical when it comes to yards, when it comes to touchdowns, when it comes to touchdowns to interceptions. And they've got the same win-loss record, Patrick Mahomes and Ryan Tannehill, of the last 18 games. I'm just giving you the facts, not opinion.
Yeah, I'm rolling with you, but I'm asking you now your opinion. When it comes down to when the games gets colder, and I would say the same questions that we have about Baltimore, because we all asked this question about
Tannehill
Baltimore.
Over Lamar. What has Lamar shown you in the postseason that he can do it?
I wouldn't trust Lamar in their postseason, though. I think they're in the exact same spot. What I was going to say is I think they're in the same spot. We ask this question about Baltimore all the time. If you eliminate the run game and force them to be one-dimensional, can Lamar throw enough to get you back into it? Do you feel like we've seen enough from Ryan Tannehill in the last season and a half to know what the answer to that question is? All I know is if you have a steady running game and one of the three best running games in the NFL, you're always in the game because of that. We haven't really seen too many scenarios outside of Kansas City last year in the AFC Championship game that forced Tennessee to be one-dimensional. If you're at that point with Tannehill, what is different? That's cool, and we'll see what happens here. But I'm not at the point where if they're down 17-3 heading into the halftime against the Buffalo Bills, I think that Tannehill's going to bring them back. I'm not there.
Yeah, they also have to put themselves in that situation, and that's something that Tennessee's been, by and large, pretty good at avoiding. They go out there, they give Derrick Henry the ball early. He goes out there and averages 5 yards per carry, leads the league in rushing right now at 588 yards. So oftentimes Ryan Tannehill is asked to be a game manager, and then he goes out there and he's better than that. This season, Ryan Tannehill has 1,400 passing yards, 13 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. And this is something we don't talk about because he doesn't really look like Lamar Jackson. Doesn't really look like Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes. But he's pretty good when it comes to running around a little bit and scrambling, too. He's only got sacked 5 times this season, and that's by and large because of his fancy footwork in the pocket. So for a guy that can keep the play alive, throws a bunch of touchdowns, doesn't throw interceptions, has Derrick Henry, and has won as many games last year as Patrick Mahomes, I think you got to call that team a real contender.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Keep it locked in right here on The Drive. Let's take a trip down memory lane back to 2015. It was a great time in all of our lives. 2015 was certainly a fun year. Mm-hmm. That was the last time that the Denver Broncos beat the Kansas City Chiefs. These were some things that happened the last time that the Broncos beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I made one of my biggest financial mistakes of my entire life. I was so happy to see Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight each other. I was one of those people that thought in their prime that Manny Pacquiao would be able to beat Floyd Mayweather. I thought Mayweather purposely ducked Manny Pacquiao. So when they finally announced that they were going to fight and they had a date that was set, oh, I ran to my television. I still had cable back then to go ahead and pre-order that fight because I didn't want any confusion when it came time. You know what we got? one of the biggest disappointments I've ever had in sports. Now, it was certainly good for Floyd Mayweather. He made $220 million from fighting Manny Pacquiao. He was the only person who enjoyed that day back in 2015.
Yeah, we talked about it for so long, and it would have been so great. And everybody still paid for it. And we all gathered around our TVs like you did and pretended like we didn't know that it was 5 years too late, but we did. And it was talked about for so long, but I was a sucker like you. And that was an expensive one, I think. That was more than the typical 49. Wasn't that like 69, 90, 70 bucks?
It was $100.
$100. Yeah, that one cost $100. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'd like a refund for that one because that's one of the most boring fights that I can ever remember watching.
I'm not going to lie to you. I told myself at that point I would never give Floyd Mayweather another dollar. Like, I was so angry after the fight.
And
I
then
said,
you paid for the Conor fight, didn't you?
I would never do it again. But then Conor McGregor was doing all this talking. I'm like, I didn't think that Conor was going to win the fight, but I didn't know what was going to happen, so I paid for it.
It was worth your money, though.
Yeah, no, I don't feel bad at all for paying for it, but at that moment, I told myself I would never let Floyd get me again, and Floyd got me one more time. Now, I'm emphatically saying it. I don't care who Floyd fights. I will never pay for another Tyson. Floyd Mayweather fight. I will never, ever give Floyd. I give him Floyd Mayweather.
I hear you. I'm not sure I believe you.
There is a Z. I don't care who Floyd Mayweather is fighting. I will never pay to watch Floyd Mayweather fight. Fight again. I paid like five times. I've seen him fight Oscar De La Hoya. I've chipped in with a friend. I saw him fight Sugar Shane Mosley. I chipped in before. I paid for Manny Pacquiao. I paid for Conor McGregor.
Victor Ortiz. We watched that one together.
Floyd Mayweather has bought enough watches off of me. I will never, ever pay to watch that gentleman fight again. I don't care who he's fighting.
I don't know why I brought up that Victor Ortiz thing. I just pissed myself off remembering that fight. But yeah, Floyd's taken a lot of my money over the days too. Although, I mean, if that actually came to fruition, if Tyson fights anybody, and I'm not sure that's ever going to happen, I'll pay for it.
Back in 2015, there was a coach at Kansas football you maybe heard of. His name was David Beatty. He then made his debut. They lost to South Dakota State. You might think South Dakota State. Maybe they went on to win the national championship in 1AA. Nope. They went 8-4 and lost in the first round of the Division II playoffs. Kansas that season back in 2015 went 0-12. So some things, even 5 years later, have never changed. Kansas went winless. Back in 2015. They might go winless this year.
Yeah, I mean, you could have played any year. That's not just 2015. What'd they do in 14? What'd they do in 16? What'd they do in 12? What'd they do last year? How many games did they get to win this season? They've won seven out of
the... You told me they were going to win more games than Missouri this year.
Yeah, I was wrong.
Survey said that was a lie.
They're going to win... They've won seven out of their last 100 Big 12 games. That's... You literally have to try to be that bad. It's just unbelievable. But yeah, 2015 was another banner year for KU football.
Rob, turn the music down. I actually forgot that this had happened back in 2015. This is like one of the craziest stories that we never talk about anymore. But this was wild when it happened.
The story actually started with a terrible moment a dozen years back during the invasion of Iraq, when the helicopter we were traveling in was forced down after being hit by an RPG. Our traveling NBC News team was rescued, surrounded, and kept alive by an armored mechanized platoon from the U.S. Army 3rd Infantry.
It was a story that Williams had told several times over the years, including in detail during one appearance on Late Night with David Letterman. After Friday's recounting, one of the crew members of that helicopter challenged Williams with this Facebook post. Sorry, I don't remember you being on my aircraft. I do remember you walking up about an hour after we had landed to ask me what had happened.
This had happened back in 2015. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I had absolutely forgot about this. NBC's Brian Williams had been telling this lie, how he was basically this war hero for his entire career. He then got called out on Facebook. We found out that he had made it up, and then he got fired. This shook my belief in the media back in 2015. Brian Williams, you Jesse Smollett out here.
Yeah, I forgot that happened also.
What a wild story to tell. Like, everybody is like told a lie before and everybody is like come up with this story. I don't know many people that had a graphic war story the way that and was like going around telling everybody the story. I then kept watching the video. His bosses told him to stop telling the story. My man just was so addicted to lying. He just kept telling the story.
Still on TV today, too. Just saw him the other day, actually. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. You got to remember who you are, what year it is, how easy it is to back check, and the fact that you're supposed to report the news. Like, it seems like if you start one of those lies, you back out of it pretty quick. You give a, ha ha, I was just joking. And then that's it. But if you keep going with the details, like, that was bound to happen.
Like, I don't know if you can do that, though, about being in a war crash. Like, he says that his plane got shot down and he survived and there were people there. Like, if you're going to tell a lie, you can't tell a lie that can easily get fact checked and referenced. Like, you got to tell a lie where nobody can confirm or deny the lie. It's just like always ambiguous. They didn't think at some point somebody who was on the plane that you said got shot down would be like, yo, you wasn't there. I saw you pull up at the last second. He didn't think that was ever going to happen. This was stupid.
No, that was stupid. But the stupidest thing of 2015, just in one man's opinion, do you remember that whole what color's the dress?
I do remember that.
That was ridiculous. What color do you think that silly dress was?
Blue and black.
Yeah, it's actually not what I saw. But either way, we don't need to debate it. We don't need to debate it right now.
You got LASIK now, so maybe you will see it very differently.
It's blue and black, guys.
Let me pull it back up real quick. Let me pull that silly 2015 dress. 2015.
I'm sure if you just type in the dress, it pops up.
Yeah, everybody remembered that dress. That was the meme.
Under Wikipedia, it is known as the dress. Oh, yeah, you're right. That's got a little bit of a blue tone to it. How did I ever think otherwise?
Because you didn't have LASIK. That's exactly why that happened.
DuryVision.com. Check it out.
So we're talking about things that happened in 2015 since the last time that the Denver Broncos beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to share one other story with you guys really quickly. So we were a month from finding out that Lamar Odom had an affinity for hanging out in Las Vegas brothels, which also led to us getting one of the greatest clips in the history of the internet.
Stephen A., the floor is yours first.
Oh, wrong one. My bad.
I'm gonna leave it to you, because if it comes out of my mouth, and I sit up there and I literally articulate the stuff that this man has done since he has been the executive of the New York Knicks, I'm gonna lose my mind. I ain't gonna be able to do the rest of the show. I'll tell you right now, if it comes out of my mouth, I'm not gonna be able to control myself, because I'm barely able to right now.
I'm gonna try to keep my composure. His very first move as the executive was to sign Lamar Odom, who was on crack.
Lamar Odom, he was just 1 month from being found in that Las Vegas brothel. I'm happy that he's doing a whole lot better. Lamar was really going down bad there for a while. We started learning a lot more about Lamar Odom than I ever thought I needed to know, but he's a healthier individual. We were just 1 month away from finding Lamar Odom at that bunny ranch.
Am I crazy, or did he never played NBA basketball every night, did he?
He did not.
Okay, I was making sure, because I remember... Yeah, we thought that he was on his deathbed for a while.
We did think he was going to die. No, we definitely thought that.
I don't really know if he's healthy right now. I haven't really done my research on Lamar Odom, but thank goodness he is still with us, because after all that information back in 2015, I would have said that'd be a long shot.
Last thing here, we actually had the breakup heard around the world. You know, we've all seen those couples that you think are going to stay together forever, that you're absolutely stunned.
Was it Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson?
It was actually Miss Kermit, or Miss Piggy and Kermit.
They broke
actually
up?
Decided that they were going to call it quits. I don't know what happened. I don't know if Mr. Kermit had a wandering eye out here around the pond, but he and Miss Piggy, they decided to call it quits soon after the Chiefs. Maybe it was the Chiefs' loss. Maybe the Chiefs losing Jamal Charles with that fumble. Maybe it broke Kermit down.
You think
so
Kermit's
much.
Tadpole was looking in other directions?
I don't know what was happening here. I have absolutely no clue what was happening. I have no additional information, but there's some couples you think are going to last, you know?
Yeah.
There's some couples you know instantly this isn't going to work out. Like, whenever we found out that Carmen Electra and Dennis Rodman were a thing, we knew that this probably wasn't going to last.
Yeah, Earl Thomas and his old lady.
Like, we knew this wasn't going to last for more than 90 days. I thought that Miss Piggy and Kermit were forever. I thought that they were true soulmates here, but no, they broke up back in 2015, soon after Chiefs and Broncos.
I haven't been that sad to hear about a relationship ending since. Did you ever watch the show Mad About You?
I have not seen that before.
With Paul Buckman and Jamie Buckman. I watched every episode of that show, and then toward the very end, they broke my heart and they got divorced. Now, apparently, there's new episodes on Netflix or Hulu or something. Same actors, they get back together. But yeah, I've still never gotten over that one. But I didn't know that. I'm very sorry to hear that news about Kermit and Piggy. It's unbelievable.
I want to play one thing for you guys before we get to the hits at the top of the hour. This is Mike Floro, everybody's favorite NFL voice. Here's what he said about the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think the Broncos are better than we realize. It's just the Chiefs, if you get them focused, that's when they're at their best. And Le'Veon Bell joining the fray, that may have everyone a little more excited this week.
Agreed.
I think the Chiefs do win. I think they do cover 31-21. I just worry about the Chiefs in these spots where they're not playing a big team on a big stage, because it feels like, whether it was the Chargers,
yeah,
whether it was the Raiders, and whether it may happen on Sunday, it just feels like these games, they get tucked into Sunday afternoon, where it isn't an elite opponent. For whatever reason, that's when the Chiefs are a little bit flat.
Yeah.
And then this is a real test to see if they can avoid that.
My biggest question in this game is, what Chiefs are we going to see here? Are we going to see the Chiefs that we saw against the Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens? If so, the Chiefs win this game pretty comfortably. And around like 5 o'clock on Sunday, you could start making other plans and start doing other things. Or are we going to see the Chiefs that have played so far in games in the division? They sleptwalked through the game against the Chargers. They did the same thing against the Raiders and it finally bit them. Which Chiefs team are we going to see? The team that plays down to their opponent. This is a team that probably doesn't cover. This is a game that's maybe a little bit more close than people would like for it to be. That's my biggest question in this. Are the Chiefs going to come ready to play?
I wouldn't get too comfortable, though, and walk away from your TV set or turn off your radio on the Wolf. I mean, they had the lead versus the Raiders two separate times, and I was guilty of that. Like, I walked away for a little bit. I went and walked the dog. I took a shower, and then I came back at halftime. The damn game was tied. So I think it's one of those games you should know early which Chiefs you're going to get, and by halftime the Chiefs are going to win the game. This is a really, really good chance, though, for the Chiefs to start making the numbers look pretty, not just this week, but versus the Jets and the Carolina in the next couple of games.
Coming up next, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.